Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with my space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio.
Hello.
Before we even get back into our conversation, I do want to thank our listeners who have been downloading our podcast on all of the platforms. We are extremely flattered and overwhelmed by your support. And so if you're listening on said podcast, these guys are just trying to make me laugh. We are just so thrilled that you can now listen to it on your own, because we realize that not everyone is in a convenient time zone to always listen at the time that it airs on the station. But please don't forget about the station. So make sure you're also checking out iRock Space Radio. So we have a Lego Baby Yoda. I thought you don't really like Star Wars, though.
I didn't know you said that.
Okay. Oh, okay. I actually had to just mute myself right now. My kids are watching the Lego movie and my son comes barreling in and he's like, "Mom, they had the ship from Star Wars with Chewbacca." And I don't think you remember the name Millennium Falcon. So I'm a bad parent.
What's the name of the astronaut from the Lego movie?
I've never
Ben. Thank you.
Well, you would know that. And it would be after your name. You would know that. But we're going to continue a conversation about space junk. It's a problem. Do you know what I referenced there, too?
I was thinking
space pants.
I was right.
I am wearing space pants. We've made four references in this show. There is a great SNL skit with the guy who plays Tyrion. Yeah.
Yes.
And he's
Peter Dinklage.
Yes, and he's like,
"When I say space, you say pants. Space pants.
Oh, yeah,
that's the greatest."
But now we're doing it for space junk.
Now
is everyone up to speed? All you listeners out there, are y'all up to speed now?
Space junk, not space junk in your pants, just space junk.
Okay.
Wow. For the remaining three listeners who we didn't lose when we were quoting the end of the world skit, those last three just left. Please turn off the light and shut the door behind you.
I hope my parents aren't listening. There's a problem with space junk, and there's a lot of it out there. And it has become a problem for the ISS. Mm-hmm. But, you know, kind of remarkably, there has not really been any accidents as so far. You know, the statistical odds of, say, a SpaceX rocket hitting something is probably pretty slim, but, you know, it could happen. I don't know.
Actually, SpaceX is very quickly becoming the on its way to be the leader in space pollution. It's
mm-hmm. perfect.
It's already beat out a couple countries.
And I think the total number of satellites that aren't SpaceX are roughly equal to the total number of Starlink satellites that have been launched.
Right.
So this brings up another valid point about space junk from an astronomer's perspective. These satellites, you know, and the satellites, I'm not saying that Starlink satellites are junk per se, but there is a lot of disgruntled astronomers out there now that when they're doing these long exposure photography things, you just see constantly just these streaks of just, you know, satellites or things up there in the night sky. And so I know that there's a good chunk of astronomers who are a little bit bitter about all the stuff that we've been throwing up there.
I mean, it's a real thing.
It is. It is.
So I think the way that people like Elon Musk and other, you know, supporters of Starlink justify it is that they talk about how these satellites move so quickly across the frame that when you average out the image over, you know, however long the integration time is for, you know, however long you're catching photons to make the image, you barely see it. But the problem is, especially for you know, deep sky astrophotography and astronomy, is that sometimes we're looking for events that happen on very short timescales, and so we might need to be looking at an individual frame and individual exposure of a short period of time, and having that light reflected from the sun by the Starlink satellite, or having radio interference generated by the Starlink satellite, can be the difference between, you know, making a positive detection or not. I just don't see it being worth it. You know what I mean?
You don't see like the cost.
I don't see the benefits of having a mega constellation of 40,000 satellites outweigh the detriments in terms of even just purely the impact on astronomy. But like, once you consider Kessler syndrome, right? Like, currently there's on the order of, I think, 6,000 or 7,000 satellites in total. So like, multiply that number by 6 or 7, and like, you know, think about how much more, if we're talking now already about these enormous debris fields that we already have of, you know, tiny particles that we can't even track. So imagine how much worse it could get. And I just think it's playing with fire, and I don't see the benefits being worth those risks. That's just my personal opinion.
Interesting. I see like both sides of the argument, because on the flip side of the coin, and I didn't expect this conversation to go this way, but I'm gonna do it. I see the benefit of them, though, is giving internet access to parts of the world that have never been able to get that before. And from a humanitarian perspective, that's, you know, information and access to the internet is getting up there as essential as like clean water.
I mean, yes, but also no. Like you don't see like the people who are, I've heard that argument. That was the first thing. Like, initially when I heard about Starlink, I thought it was a wonderful idea for that exact reason. But the problem is, practically, that's not what's happening. That those aren't the people who are using Starlink. People who are using Starlink are, you know, people who have private jets or yachts, or people who live in remote places, not, you know, communities in sub-Saharan Africa who don't have access to fiber optics cables. And I think also, when you consider the fact that it's possible to cover the Earth in a coverage sense with far fewer satellites. So you can, I think there was a plan for like 650 in a mega constellation for the company OneWeb. It's like, there's a way to do this that isn't just throwing, you know, 40,000 satellites into orbit, that can have these same humanitarian benefits with, you know, taking less of a risk.
Sure. Benjamin, what are your thoughts? No, I'm not. I'm listening.
I agree with Kavi that as far as the visual pollution, it's making hard to see things. SpaceX is aware of it, and they are starting to paint all their satellites much, 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 much darker, so they can't be seen too easily. But that's not enough. And I agree with Kavi. It's not. There's, you know, SpaceX has its vision of covering the sky with its satellite constellations, but so do other companies, and they're not going to work together and say, let's just use just the one satellite. No, we're going to have ours. You'll have yours. They'll have theirs. And so they're just going to keep throwing things up there, and it's getting cheaper. It's getting insanely cheaper, and the technology is improving that the things that you set up can be much, much, much smaller and last much, much, much longer. So it's just, it's nothing.
Right. That's always kind of the crux of like technology, right? Because I'm sure that there are most of those like first generation Starlink satellites are probably, I mean, even sometimes they send up a batch and half of them like get hit by a solar flare and then they're done. So there, you know, I'm sure there is a lot of that space debris responsible also for that. Like, oh, we built and designed this idea, this concept, fling it out to space. Oh, look, the technology improved. We can send something else now that does it even better. That's defunct.
I think to be a little bit more optimistic and more charitable towards people like Elon, I would say that if, because the painting thing that Benjamin mentioned is nice, but it's decreasing its reflectivity, you know, not completely removing it. I think that if SpaceX was also investing heavily in R&D for space debris cleanup, I would be much faster to take a positive position on Starlink. Because yeah, I think it's just, it's a little bit irresponsible. That's just, yeah, what it comes down to for me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so speaking of that, that's a great segue. There are companies though that are seeing the money in this. They see an opportunity to be basically the garbage collectors of space. And I'm trying to remember, there's a big name. It's not Northrop. I don't think it's Northrop, but it's, I remember reading this a while ago and I can't for the life of me.
The Japanese? The Japanese company?
No,
I think they're called Astroscale. United States
based aerospace company.
Astroscale?
Astroscale? I'm not sure, but you guys are aware of some other ones. So there's some Japanese companies. Who else is trying?
I just know the names of a couple.
Hold on.
There are American companies, European companies, and Japanese companies that are trying to do it.
I just had a great idea. We should create our own company and call it Oscar, like Oscar the Grouch for cleanup. And it could be orbital satellite clean and recovery, cleanup and recovery. Oscar.
See, look at you getting on copyright acronyms. Like, you know what's up. Yeah, it's now,
nobody
like
steal all that.
All these names I'm not recognizing anymore, but it was somebody big. But this was quite a while ago. So I wonder if maybe they just kind of gave up on pursuing it. There's definitely an interest, though, in what I'm like, geez, I'm reading this article here and it's companies like Planet, Astroscale, Changguang Satellite, ClearSpace, which is a Swiss startup. There's a lot. Yeah. And I mean, this is kind of, it's one of those things where, again, it's the horse and the cart. They see the money. They're running. Everybody's running to be the first for something, right? That's just the way it is. And so there's definitely an opportunity for this space cleanup. But again, back to the point we had at the beginning, is it fast enough for what is getting flung out there? Are they building up quick enough to really make an impact? And then again, what do we do about it? I mean, it seems like we're just waiting for that first whoops. Or I don't know.
There'll need to be a big whoopsie. And
there will be a like big whoopsie.
Yeah. If we keep going like this for you know, a couple more decades, there will definitely be a big whoopsie where a satellite that was not, you know, abandoned and defunct will be hit and will be destroyed. And then some, you know, millions of dollars are going to be lost, and then suddenly there'll be a financial incentive for the private market to say, you know what, we don't want that to happen again. And hopefully that will be enough, because if it does turn into a full-on Kessel syndrome, the issue is you know, like, so much of our lives is really tied to these satellites for, you know, GPS, for telecommunications, you know, like financial markets, which also use satellite communications. Like, it would be very not so good.
I would argue that all it would take is to take out a couple of satellites that can, you know, help with people's cell phones, and that would be enough to spark outrage. Be like, I was streaming this show on my phone and then it stopped.
During the finale of the next season of House of Dragon, just take out one of the HBO satellites and watch everybody lose their friggin' minds.
Exactly. Did you just concoct a master evil plan on how to start this revolution? Googling right now. When will the final episode air? Actually, if it was the final episode of The Last of Us of the season or something like that, I would be very mad. I'm really enjoying that show.
Don't say anything. I haven't started it yet.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Well, I have to finish playing the game before I watch the show. Even though it's an old game.
I think this was a very thoughtful and thought-provoking conversation in this third segment here, because I think that there are a lot of gray areas in so much of space exploration. I have encountered many a people who don't quite see what the purpose is for space and exploring space, and you know, there's just kind of these different sides of the table that it's sometimes it's hard for me not to be like, I do agree. And I see what you're saying here. And I do agree. And I see what you're saying over there. You know, it's a really challenging, but for me, very engaging kind of place to be in this industry, to have this, have these conversations of, you know, I personally got to experience the beauty of Starlink when I was at the Mars Desert Research Station. It was great, you know, like, so I have these, you know, different experiences that I'm bringing to the table as well. And so I enjoy having different viewpoints and conversations. So thank you both for that. And kind of inconclusively, there's a lot of space junk. What do? We don't know. And we're doomed, to quote the late great C-3PO. It's like a big reference right there. Boom.
I don't like C-3PO.
We should be more overtired. More.
We should have a counter for Star Wars references.
Star Trek references.
You know, we should do an episode. Maybe this is a good teaser for a future one. Joseph Campbell was the author that inspired George Lucas to write Star Wars, on sort of the premise of that, the kind of the classic storytelling of these great heroes and these battles of good and evil and blah, blah, blah. And then Star Trek is just approached it completely different, with this more, I don't know,
utopian, realistic.
Maybe not utopian. That's no, definitely not. But yeah, a more, there's not so strong of themes of good and evil and dark and light. It's different. And it's maybe at some point we can do a nerd out about the like philosophical elements of, but there are actually like college classes that do talk about it. It is something that people look at a lot.
There was a close friend of mine. Hey, Adam, if you're listening to this, sent me a video the other day.
Hello.
A video that kind of breaks it. It's an 80-minute video that I really was not expecting to actually get through, of the seeing how democracy can turn into dictatorship, looking at the prequels. And Benjamin, I know I sent it to you, and like you had the prequels and whatever.
Benjamin's rolling
his eyes. But putting aside, you know, how you might feel about Jar Jar Binks, it was like very interesting to see at least comparisons to, you know, realistic political situations of, you know, what happens when people get lost in... What are you shaking your head at?
There's absolutely no real world comparison to even the most minuscule political landscape in the prequels. There's nothing. There's nothing.
Well, I'm going to have to watch this.
No. I want this segment to go long, and I want everyone to know... my very heartfelt and strong opinions that the prequels were caca.
A plausible, not caca.
Go find your emotional support.
My close personal friends, including my brother-in-law who work at Lucasfilm. That was real nice. That was a good movie you made. I liked it. Everyone else is listening.
We're so sorry.
Oh God!
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Space Case Sarah Show. As always, a reminder: follow us all on social media. Yes, we are this ridiculous in real life. This is not just for a show.
What?
This is us. And so follow us on social media. You can also find us on iRock Space Radio's website, where you can find links to the podcast. Go find other nonsense that we've done. And thank you again for being listeners to the Space Case Sarah Show. So tune in next week. I don't know exactly if that will be the theme next week, but tune in next week to hear more references and nonsense. You have been listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with the Space Nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio.